Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
All right, Chuck Bonnell, Julie Hayden. This is True Straight Up for a wonderful day and the end of our 20-year escapade in Afghanistan.
Yeah, Chuck Bonnell, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Show brought to you by AmericasCitizenPress.com and Denver Cenogenics with Dr. Julie McCallan. Yeah, just a short time ago, it's a wrap. The last military plane took off from the Kabul airport in Afghanistan. No American citizens were on it, despite the fact that the military acknowledges they believe there are hundreds left behind,
alone
the thousands of the allies who were left behind. All of the other people. In fact, on August 19th, this is when Joe Biden, that was not that long ago, the 19th, was that years ago? No, it was about like 10 days ago. Biden told ABC if there were American citizens left, we will stay until we get them out. Well, that, like,
or
everything else Joe Biden says,
we'll
was a lie. And then in the meantime, then it's disgraceful and shameful. Also today, there are now pictures of, you know, some of the Black Hawk helicopters that we left behind for the Taliban soldiers are now flying around, and they're hanging the people, the interpreters, the people that we have now abandoned in Afghanistan. They're hanging them from the helicopters that we've just handed over to them. Meanwhile, we had an airstrike that killed an Afghan family. And Biden said, yay, we got the terrorists. Of course, on the other hand, we did kill
a lot of the family, family members.
Killed some other people. But other than that, we're going to have Robert Spencer with Jihad Watch here on with a second. But I just, in looking at that, there's no other word for it, but despicable for Joe Biden. He lied to us when he said we were going to stay until we got everyone out. And then he's trying to say, hooray, the military, yay, we're ended. I mean, the longest war, unless, of course, you happen to be one of the thousands of people left behind who are now at the hands of the Taliban, who, of course, according to Joe Biden, we can trust because they've been great about this so far.
All right. Well, let's bring on Robert Spencer, our expert from Jihad Watch. It's always great to have Robert on. And so this is the end of a 20-year chapter, but it's a new beginning of a new chapter, isn't it, Robert?
Well, sure, yeah. It's a beginning of a new chapter of surrender, appeasement, confusion at the top. It's not that we shouldn't have gotten out of Afghanistan. We should have, actually, about 19 years ago. But the way that it was disastrously mishandled by this administration is something that's going to haunt us for the foreseeable future.
Let me, you know, Robert Spencer, we've had him on before, and he's just an expert about everything going on in this part of the world. So what do you think? Like I said, there are pictures. And again, it's hard to tell anymore what's real and what's not real. But it clearly looks to be like an American Black Hawk helicopter with bodies hanging from it. And the Taliban is like, oh, no, we'll be nice. We'll be nice. What do you suspect is the fate of the people, both the allies and the American citizens who Joe Biden just left behind enemy lines?
They're very likely to be taken hostage because Islamic law allows for hostage taking under circumstances like this if you think that you can get a ransom. However, they also might just be killed outright if the Americans don't indicate that they're going to come across with the cash. I rather suspect that Biden would be all too happy, or Biden's handlers, that is, would be only too happy to give billions of dollars to the Taliban. And so we're likely going to see some large-scale hostage situations in the near future.
Well, we gave up $4 billion, was it, for one American deserter?
$1.4 billion, I think.
No, it was
$4 billion?
$4 billion.
For Bo Bergdahl, and released a bunch of people.
And five
Taliban leaders, as a matter of fact, one of whom was in the group that entered Kabul on August 15th.
That's right.
And
that's right.
He'd been in Guantanamo for 8 years and was released.
Fond memories of, well, what about now? There was another thing today, a guy who was with Osama bin Laden, his security guy, and I'm not going to pronounce his name right, Amin al-Haq, was seen in Afghanistan today with Al Qaeda, in spite of President, you know, the military and everyone telling us, oh, no, Joe Biden, Al Qaeda's not in Afghanistan. Well, they are today. What do you foresee? And we'll get back to the hostages in a second. But in terms of just what's going to be happening now in Afghanistan, any thoughts on what we might look for?
Well, there is going to be Al Qaeda activity. There's going to be ISIS activity. The idea that these groups are at odds with one another is very much exaggerated. ISIS does criticize the Taliban for being narrowly focused on Afghanistan and not on the global Islamic community. But that's where Al-Qaeda and ISIS themselves come in, actually. And they are all too happy to work together against infidels, even though they might have differences among themselves. So I think that what we're going to see is Al-Qaeda activity, ISIS activity in Afghanistan, and the Taliban aiding them in carrying their jihad outside of Afghanistan to Pakistan, to India, and elsewhere.
India is an interesting one, and only in the Kashmir province do the Islamic people constitute a majority, but there's still a great number of Islamics in India, although the present government is very much pro-Hindu and not very tolerant of other religions. What do you see happening there?
I think that there's going to be jihad against India, as a matter of fact, on a much more concentrated basis than we have seen up to now, because you've got the Pakistani spy service, the ISI, the Inner Security Institute, or whatever it is, that is the intelligence agency of the Pakistani government. And they have been verified as being behind the Mumbai bombings from some years back, 2008, where hundreds of people were killed. And they also have been linked to funding and training the Taliban. And so I think it's very likely that you're going to see now the ISI and other sympathetic elements within the Pakistani government working with the Taliban to strike against India again.
What about in terms of other weapons left behind? Can you help us, I guess, get our heads around how dangerous, because it seems to me it's very dangerous. You read some of these military guys saying, oh, they don't know how to fix them. But you've got China.
Well, they also said they didn't know how to fly.
They also said, yeah, I saw one thing, and I don't know if it was a joke or not. It's on YouTube, right? They learned how to fly a Black Hawk helicopter on YouTube. I mean, someone's flying them. And we've also had reports that the Afghan military has surrendered, obviously. I mean, what do you make of the weapons that we've left behind, and you know, where is the Taliban and whoever ends up flying them around and using them and selling them, I would imagine, is an option too. I mean, are they really just all going to break down here in a couple of weeks and we'll go back to being as if it never happened?
No, quite the contrary. Look, this is now the a better equipped military force than a lot of countries have. Mm-hmm. And of course, it is essentially the national force of Afghanistan at this point. And look, you mentioned the Afghan National Army, and that's very important, because remember how there were recurring green-on-blue attacks, that is, that the Afghan National Army people that we were supposed to be training, that were supposed to be our allies, would suddenly, without warning, turn on the people that were training them and kill them? Yeah. A large number of American casualties in Afghanistan came from our friends, who turned out not to be our friends. These are the same people who were greeting the Taliban coming into various cities and towns in Afghanistan, saying assalamu alaikum, handing over their weapons to them when they would enter the city. And so the Afghan National Army knows how to operate that material. They were trained on it, and they will tell the Taliban how to do it. And like you said also, if they don't do it, then the Chinese are right there, and also the Iranians are right there.
Right.
And there were some early reports right after Kabul fell of some American Humvees and other things heading into Iran. And we have to remember also that Iran has in the past funded the Taliban. And even though there's the Sunni-Shiite divide, they both hate America, and they both will be happy to work together against America. So I think we're going to see some of that showing up with the Iranian forces, and some of it being used in Afghanistan itself, some of it also probably traveling into Pakistan and maybe even being used in these operations against India that we were discussing before.
Exactly. And didn't I read somewhere today, too, that there was new reports that Iran, who I don't think ever stopped their nuclear research, seems to have stepped it up? Oh, well. Was that lately?
I doubt if they can step it up anymore.
Their reports indicate they're very close now. At the same time, I do take those with a grain of salt because I've heard this for years now. They're very close. Within months, they'll have a nuclear weapon and so on and so on. The Israelis have done very serious damage to the Iranian nuclear program some of those mysterious explosions, mysterious computer accidents, things like that at various Iranian nuclear plants, and that set them back considerably. So they may be close now for real, but we've heard this song before.
What about?
All right, well, I want to ask a question here.
Okay.
We're with Robert Spencer, Jihad Watch. I want to go back to your comment a little earlier. We should have gotten out there out of Afghanistan 19 years ago. Donald Rumsfeld, who was the architect of the invasion of Iran with a small footprint and to fight off the Pentagon, who wanted a kind of a Normandy Day invasion. And he was also, surprisingly, the one who said, let's get out of there now. We've done what we want. Let's get out of there. But he got overruled by the Cheney Bush cabal.
It's a shame. We should have gotten out. The fact is that the idea of creating a Western-style secular republic, which is what the Bush-Cheney people had in mind in Afghanistan, was just as unrealistic as it was in Iraq. It did not take into account the allegiance that the people there have for Islamic law. Islamic law does not allow for a secular Western-style republic with one man, one vote. For one thing, it devalues women. And that's a big problem in regard to a free society and a Western model. It devalues non-Muslims and denies them basic rights, and also is deeply anti-Semitic. It denies the freedom of speech, forbids criticism of Islam. All these things are part of Islamic law and much more as well, justifications for the brutalization of women and so on. And so we should have, instead of trying to build a kind of society there that has never been there and that the people didn't want, we should have gotten out and just quarantined the place effectively, making sure that they could not export their jihad like they did on September 11th, 2001. Should have been the extent of it. We didn't have any business being in there trying to build a just society for Afghanistan that the Afghans didn't even want.
Where would that theory come up with? I suppose it's the neocons in particular hoping that would create a better atmosphere in the Middle East for Israel and otherwise. The idea that it was both logical, rational, doable, that we should go into these countries and turn them into decadent.
Well, plus you have to spend a lot of money on war.
Well, decadent U.S. societies, because it's very hard to look.
Well, George W. Bush and his cohorts, they were saying that Iraq and Afghanistan would become a light in the Islamic world. That is, that they would become stable, peaceful democracies, and then the other countries there would presumably imitate their model, and this would bring peace to the whole region. That was the idea. It was kind of a utopian, airy, pie-in-the-sky kind of idea from the beginning that was not really based on the reality of the facts on the ground. And ultimately, Woodrow Wilson's fault, really, when he said, getting us into World War I, we're going to make the world safe for democracy. We're still trying to do that all over the place, and it never works.
No.
Well, Woodrow Wilson wanted to do two things. He wanted to get rid of our archaic 18th century constitution, and he wanted to make the world a better place. It's hard to figure out where Woodrow Wilson wasn't awful, whether it's racism, whether it's segregation.
Kind of like Biden, then. Yeah.
Kind of like Biden, yeah. Yeah, except he was a lot more
confident. That's right.
Well, but what about that? Let me
he
talk
was
a little bit
smarter about Biden.
Let's talk a little bit about money. So how does that, because, you read things, some of the reports on the ground, so they're cutting off electricity at night. There's no sanitation services. The banks are, people can't get their money out. All kinds of basically just, running a city kind of problems there. But how much does the Taliban need the money that the international community in the United States has frozen? I mean, it's my understanding that most of the Afghan government's money is in the United States. How much do they need that? Where do they get the money? And how do you see them getting the rest of it back playing out?
Well, I don't see this as a serious problem because you've got, in the first place, all that materiel that we left them that they could sell if they're in a pinch. And that's going to bring in some money. Also, you have the countries of the world already starting to line up to give them aid. Some people in Germany, of course, have already talked about that. Well, now we need to aid the Taliban. And a lot of voices on the left are saying in various countries that we need to actually pay reparations.
Yeah, well, good.
Oh, my gosh.
Finally.
Well, yeah, I mean, equity.
It's insane, but it's likely to happen. Not necessarily the reparations, but certainly all kinds of foreign aid are going to start flowing because that's just what the Western countries do. And they're not going to stop now. And so I don't really think they have anything to worry about in the long run. Also, it must not be overlooked that they are a jihad group, and jihad groups have very powerful backing. ISIS is a very wealthy organization, and it has been since its inception, and that's because there are some very wealthy Muslims who believe that they're doing the work of Allah and are happy to send them a few hundred million to help. And the Taliban
Qatar
is so different.
Yeah, Qatar would probably be happy.
Well, and then my follow-up.
Absolutely.
I had a follow-up question, though, to that, and that was, so then how, so we think, okay, well, we're going to be able to get all of these hostages back because they're going to want their money, but if they don't really need their money, how does that complicate or, I mean, what, you know, what does the United States have to offer them, really, if we want to get our people back and get them out safe?
Nothing. It's only the money and Islamic law. The Taliban operates strictly according to Islamic law. So this is the one thing, for some reason, in the State Department, they never, ever do it, and probably never will. But you want to understand ISIS, you want to understand Al-Qaeda or the Taliban, study Islamic law. And Islamic law says that if you're not going to ransom them, if you can't get money, then you can kill them or enslave them. So there's no good option that is ahead for the Americans who are trapped there and the people who helped us out who were trapped there.
You know, and the military today said, hey, look, we're done. We flew our last plane out. The State Department is now in charge of getting all of those other people out. So you're saying some people who have no basic, clue, Jake Sullivan, no experience, are now in charge of getting these people out. And that's not good at all.
Right. They don't have the slightest clue of what they're dealing with. And they're going to get taken to the bank in a literal way.
Okay.
What do you think is going to happen after the fall of Vietnam in 75, Cambodia fell, but really the domino effect, which was such a crucial part of our planning in Southeast Asia, did not occur. I have a feeling that it's not going to be so gentle in the United States after this failure.
Well, I think the United States is a lot weaker now than it was then and a lot less resolute. And also, the United States still hasn't acknowledged what we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
That there is a global jihad, that there are forces that are trying to impose Islamic law all over the world, and they are also operating in the United States. I'm not saying the United States is going to fall to Sharia forces at all, but it might fall to some other things, with the left allying with the Sharia forces around the world and trying to destroy the United States. The situation right now is very dire. And with politicians on the left openly calling for restrictions on the freedom of speech and essentially the criminalization of dissent, we're in very deep trouble here.
What about this, too? I know here in the United States, we have the general sense that, hey, you know, it was incompetence that cost us this, not anything else. But if you're the Taliban or if you're Al-Qaeda or if you're ISIS, and I know I've seen some of their PR campaigns, I'm imagining that they're not portraying this as, hey, we just got lucky here with Biden being an idiot. I mean, I imagine they don't see it as we just made a mistake. I think they probably saw it as they won, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Oh, very much so. Oh, they're all over the Islamic world. They're saying this is a great victory for Islam. They've defeated the superpower. Allah has given them this victory, and that's a sign that there will be more victories to come. So this is essentially emboldening jihadis all over the world. And Hamas has been crowing, Hezbollah, all of them have been saying, this is a sign that America can be beaten and the beginning of America's decline. And the thing about that is that's not just empty rhetoric. They're going to be following through to try to make sure that happens.
Where is the next country that could fall under jihadi rule?
Well, that's a tough one because there are several candidates. I would say the main arena where that could happen now is Africa, and that could be Somalia. which is already pretty much controlled by jihadis, but there is a part of it that is outside of their purview. But here again, with the jihadis emboldened and enriched, that situation could change. Nigeria is also very severely attacked. The non-Muslims in Nigeria are under attack practically every day, and the government is essentially on the side of the jihadis. So that could become a strict Sharia state that violently persecutes non-Muslims on an institutionalized basis. That could be quite easy. Mozambique also, there is a whole province of Mozambique, Cabo Delgado, that has fallen under the control of ISIS, and it is next to some very rich oil fields. And so that situation could become quite significant for the rest of the world very quickly.
Well, and again, keeping in mind that they now are, like you said, have a bigger, better equipped army than many countries. What about the refugee situation? You know, they're flying them all over the place now. I mean, given the fact, I imagine that most of them were people who were just frantic to get out and lucky enough to do so. But I also, I mean, you know, we keep hearing about this person is on the terror watch list. This person is on the terror watch list. How much of a threat is that, do you think?
It's a very big threat. I mean, look, you've got people, we don't know who these people are at all. And there was a huge spike in forged documents and forged identity papers and all sorts of things as Kabul was falling and Afghanistan was falling. And so also the Taliban opened up the prisons in Kabul. Yeah. Where the Americans and the Afghan national government had been holding thousands of ISIS and al-Qaeda jihadis, and now they're loose. How many of them have come over here as refugees? We don't know. We're going to find out. But the thing is that the Biden administration being institutionally committed to denying the reality of Islamic jihad, how can they possibly vet for it?
Yeah.
Well, I had an argument with a cohort about the Afghans who were coming over, and I indicated they're virtually all Islamic. And he went, well, how do you know that? I said, because Afghan is 99.7 Islamic. So if it's 99.7, 99.7 is probably coming over here. But moreover, I've seen polls on what the attitudes are of the ones coming over, and most of them believe in Sharia law and a lot of other things that are going to make an interesting integration into U.S. society.
Well, exactly. This is going to cause a lot of societal disruption. And there is nobody, you're the first right here, nobody's talking about this. Nobody is even considering the possibility that bringing in a large population of people who don't believe in the equality of rights of women and believe that they can rape or molest the women of other groups. And this is something that we've seen all over the place in Britain. It's been happening for years, and the British have been afraid to do anything about it for fear of being called Islamophobic. But this is all part of Islamic tradition. It's unpleasant, but this is the fact. This kind of thing is going to cause trouble in the United States.
Well, you've got all these mayors saying, bring him here. Come on, bring him in here. That'll be,
and this. Well, other than one from Chicago is saying this would be like home for them.
Yeah. Now they've got guns.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't know different than Kabul on a good Saturday night.
Maybe just a couple of comments. This is from Dr. Donna. And by accident, a whole bunch of folks, unintended or mistaken as those who were supposed to come here, were switched with those who are not intended to be the first to leave. And then from Charlene, I don't believe any of this is a mistake. China's getting their money's worth out of Biden. The United States embarrassed on the world stage. Taiwan will surrender without a fight. I think, to me, the more this unfolds, and I think that it's going to get bad here again in a few days as we see what starts to happen to the people left behind, particularly, Robert, as you point out, if they don't really need the money as badly as we think they do. This is going to be bad. I think there was a poll that came out today that said 84% of the people surveyed thought that we should have stayed in Afghanistan until all of the Americans were out. 71% thought we should have stayed until all of our allies were out. And all Biden wanted was this big optic of the last plane flying out.
9/11.
Yeah. And I just think this is going to be bad.
No doubt about it. And it really wouldn't have been that hard. Look, I'm not even a military man. And I know that I could have organized this myself. You get our people together, you put the strong forces around a perimeter, you get everybody inside that you want to get out, you get them out, then you get the forces out, nobody dies, Nobody gets held hostage. All done.
Right.
What's the big deal? But our military was too busy being woke and enforcing critical race theory on the troops and so on to do anything like that.
Where do you think Biden goes from here? Do you think he's able to recover from this? This is just a setback?
Yeah, I don't think he'll have any problem. I don't think there'll be any problem at all, because the establishment media and the powerful elites, they're all behind it, you know, and they don't like Kamala Harris either. So I don't think he'll suffer any serious repercussions for this. He'll get ridiculed a bit, and then people will forget about it and figure the news cycle will move on, and that'll be that.
Well, and it'll be hard to blame if there are terrorist activities here. You know, if you're Joe Biden, you can just say, well, it's Trump's fault.
That- well, but you're still left with the fact that Robert Gates said that Biden had been wrong about virtually every foreign national security matter for 40 years. Well, he's still in there. Why did he make the wrong?
Three more years of this.
Making every wrong security decision possible. So that's got to be a little scary.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, you know, whoever's running him, they're just going to keep running him. And they're going to be making more disastrous mistakes. And then the establishment media will do its best to whitewash and sugarcoat everything and make us think that everything's under control or that it couldn't have happened any other way. And so it's unfortunate, but we just have to live with it. This is the kind of spin that they're trying to put on this. And unfortunately, a lot of people just go ahead and go along. I think most Americans still have no idea how serious the situation is.
No, I think you're right. Well, Robert, listen, thank you for your time. People can find out more at Jihad Watch, right?
You're always great, Robert.
Absolutely. Jihadwatch.org. Thanks. Always good to talk to you folks.
All right. Okay, thank you too, Robert. Take care. I think, you know, again, that poll is interesting that Biden had made all of these disastrous decisions based on the hooray for me parade he was going to have on 9/11, right, as the last plane left. But I think it is interesting. The polls are like, hey, wait, no, if we're going to leave like this, we certainly shouldn't have left all of our allies and American citizens behind.
I don't necessarily blame the people who run Biden for this one. I think this was a Biden special.
That's what you said.
It was something he truly did believe. Had believed for a long time, but of course, with the pea brain he's got left, execution wasn't very easy. But that's a problem with all his future decisions. Will be, you know, you'll still have that pea brain at the center of power.
Right. Exactly. Well, then, so switching that, we're going to switch gears. Let me point out. Feel free to keep commenting on this on the chat thing. We'll do that. Or if you want to call in, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. Wanted to talk a little bit about COVID and masks. And then Chuck, as you know, he's been fighting this opt-out party, and all the forces of evil that have aligned against him keep saying that if we hold an actual Republican primary for Republicans, the party bosses will take over, which really begs the question, who are the party bosses? I mean, we can tell you all the people it's not. And then we're like, well, then who is it? So we'll get in and want to get your thoughts on that too. But first, just a little bit of levity on, I think, what is otherwise kind of a bad day. And this could, Michael Tao sent me, it was a link to Rumble. And it is a mask song put to a, like a children's song, which I kind of got a kick out of it. So I thought we'd play it for you. Thomas, if we could play the Mask Came Back video, please.
Ms. Hamner had a mask she didn't want to wear. She liked to fill her lungs with unfiltered COVID air. So deftly she removed it with a gesture of the hand. Sent a message to the Fauci he could go pound sand. But the mask came back. It set a steady pace. The very next day it was on her face. So she got a pair of scissors and cut it into bits. While all the checks on Twitter were throwing hissy fits, she tossed it in the garbage, then threw the garbage out, then set it all on fire so there could not be any doubt. But the mask came back. It set a steady pace. The very next day it was on her face.
Third verse, last verse.
The CDC insisted if she got the double jab, the mask would go away, for they had proved it in the lab. So she got a couple shots, and a booster for good measure, and everyone seemed satisfied. The mask was gone forever.
But the mask came back.
Set a steady pace. The very next day, it was on her face.
There you go. Does that not feel like the world that we live in? And I wanted to just talk briefly about...
How kind of a simple folk song can kind of...
As a kid's song. I forget which kid's song it is, but I know we have sung it in our house. But this is interesting. Rand Paul was tweeting this all over the place. According to an Israeli COVID study, the natural immunity that you would get from actually having the vaccine is vastly better than the vaccine itself. In fact, the vaccinated people were 27 times more likely to get symptomatic COVID infection than the others, although there were no deaths in either group. So it does seem like perhaps a vaccine was helpful in preventing. But again, how do you prove a negative, right? How do you know that it's already a vaccine? But I think, to me, why I like this kind of stuff is, a year ago, that song, the person who had been in prison, right? I'm shipped off to Australia to a quarantine. Well, it's harder and harder because you do have these studies coming out and people coming out saying, well, wait a minute, what about natural immunity? And you know, that's why they don't want to talk about natural immunity, because this only, to me, raises a question. So if they had just let all of us alone with a disease that's 99.9% survivable, that many people don't even get sick enough to know that they have it, right? You have to be tested to know that you have it because you don't have any other symptoms. So they freaked us all out, locked us down, have us with our kids still wearing masks. I wanted to shake people at the grocery store and say, why are you wearing a mask? Whereas if Dr. Julie McCallum had said, most of us had just gotten it, right, with natural immunity, we would all be fine. And it seems as if the vaccine doesn't react. The variant, it has not very much protection potency, from the variant at all. And in fact, maybe is worse. So here again, you got to wonder if this whole, you know, the government, don't worry, trust me, I'm here from the government. I'm here to help you. And sort of like the Americans in Afghanistan. Okay, come to the airport. And if you want to get on the plane, you could get on the plane. Oh, except for that car bomb. Don't mind that. You know, once again, your government at work. So, but I think people know this now. I think, to me anyway,
I think it's
many
divided.
Do.
I think it's divided. I think among the true believers, and there are many of them, believe that, you know, they if they could tell you their heart of hearts, they'd be happy to wear a mask the rest of their life to show their subservience to the state.
Right.
It allows them to feel morally superior and better, and they get to hide behind it. And they feel very happy with their mask. And in fact, a lot of people say, I mean, I hate to admit this, but sometimes, like, I went over to Noodles and they're a big mask company, to pick up something. And I reached into the well between the seats to get my mask. And no, I don't have to do that. What are you thinking, you idiot? You fool.
I was reading something. Some woman they were interviewing said, oh, I like wearing a mask. She was in customer service. She was in retail. She's like, because I hate the customers. And when I have the mask on, they can't tell that I'm actually making a face at them. I'm like, well, there, that's the kind of employee. That's what we want. That's the kind of people we want wearing masks.
I'm starting to believe those people who say we'll never be done with the mask.
I don't think forever. Well, but hopefully we can stop this nonsense with the kids. And they're back to, you know, I mean, briefly, CNN's, you know, worried about the hurricane and the impacts of COVID. No, they're worried about the hurricane, but they'll quit being worried about that. They'll quit being worried about Afghanistan because their reporter's gone now. And they'll start being worried. And all we're going to hear about are COVID cases. You notice you've seen now that with children, because they want to keep the kids vaccinated, they think if they can keep the kids vaccinated, then they can force the parents to be vaccinated. They're saying hospital cases increase
over the top.
But it's with RSV, which is a common childhood respiratory disease, and COVID. They say it's a mixture. And then when you look at the numbers, it's like one COVID case and 99 RSV cases, which is typical, right? So they're combining it. Now they're going to say the number of COVID cases plus RSV plus cancer plus stomach flu plus irritable bowel syndrome is skyrocketing. Yeah. I mean, they're just going to throw everything in. It's just, so hopefully, but anyway, that was a song. That was a song for your day. Exactly. So now I'll let you explain who are the Colorado Republican Party bosses?
Well, one of the things that listen to my good friend, Peter Boyles, and he's always talking about the party bosses. The party bosses will then choose if we opt out. The party bosses did this. The Republican Party got Tom Tancredo, and the Republican Party cut his throat. The Republican Party bosses did this and did that. And so I was kind of going, well, let me think.
Who are they?
Since I spent all my time around all the most powerful Republicans in the state.
Since being elected to the state central committee, state central you're talking committee. To all these people.
Yeah. And as a practical matter, this opt-out thing is just totally roiled the Republican Party. You see articles today in the Colorado Sun, massive front page thing.
And here's the thing. They keep saying getting rid of the primary. The reality is it's reinstating the primary. Yeah, so right. Language matters. You're not getting rid of the
old
primary.
We're getting reinstating the old primary.
Right.
And so I really can't think. I mean, as a practical matter, who began this thing that has roiled this whole party? It's Ben across the street, across the fairway, me.
So it's Ben. Ben, are you the party boss that will be deciding? I mean, you would like that. You would like that. And I might give you my vote there.
And Neil Mathai, who lives in Westminster. And
he's really busy, though. Neil has a job and travels all the time. Yeah. So it's hard to be a party boss and hold down a full-time job.
He does a great job. Peg Cage from Boulder. And then we were later to show the Fab Four. Joined with Jimmy Mack and North Jeffco. That was it. That was the grand total of this.
The party bosses who will be deciding.
And so we took over.
You guys are like the mafia where you hide your party. You just have regular houses, you don't exert any power.
I mean, we're the ones who started this whole thing, got it going, moving it, still engaged. And we've got lots of other great people like Dave Williams and our good friend
Randy Corcoran.
But just a small little group of kind of nice people. Well,
people who care about the Republican Party, who are not politicians for the most part.
Well, they're not.
Well, you're not looking at it. Well, so that raised a question. So, and if you guys.
So I thought, okay, assuming we are not the Fab Four plus Jimmy are not the party bosses, who are the party bosses in Colorado that control the Republican Party?
That Peter's so afraid of.
Yeah.
And that people who are against us are so afraid of.
You know, I could have gone back 30 years ago and seen that, people like, John Andrews, Senator Armstrong,
right?
Both ways, Bob, in some ways, and
Bill Owens. Others.
Bill Owens, you consider
it's
them.
It's been a while,
They weren't really party bosses. Party bosses go back to the days where people controlled.
Yeah, but you envision a party boss where like you go to their like Obama. Right. Where you go to their house, you ask them for permission to do stuff and they come up with ideas and things like that. And they basically tell everybody what to do.
Well, and they also run, cities and stuff.
Right.
I mean, so today there are no party bosses. They're none. Christy Burton Brown, I mean, she likes to push her weight around like she's a party boss, but she's certainly not. Who is, is it Ken Buck? Are you got to kidding me? He's hiding out in Northern Colorado or at least in Washington after
Cory Gardner.
Cory Gardner, he hasn't been back to Colorado in a year or two or whatever.
He doesn't even have a local number cell phone anymore. No, I don't know about that. Let's go through some of the people in 888-627-6008 or go ahead and chime in on chat. If you can help us figure out who the party bosses are that the other side is so afraid are going to be running Colorado. I would submit that one thing you have to have to be a party boss is name recognition, right? You would have to say.
No, you don't need name recognition. You need power.
You need power.
And the only place the Republicans have any power is in Colorado Springs, and that's kind of tepid. And so you could get sleazy Ed Southers.
John Southers. No, he's not.
And he could be one. You could get Daniel Cole, maybe, who runs the...
Leo is like, it's the corn dog vendors.
I knew it.
And Ben is saying, no, he only drives the getaway.
That's a party boss, isn't it?
The
getaway.
And shoots. That's true. Good one, Ben. My mother's family, Dr. Donna, my mother's family is from Italy. Party bosses bring a particular vision to mind. these people are saying, the opposite side is saying, we can't do this because it'll be the smoke-filled back rooms.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to submit to you that the party bosses are the consultants. Right. Because they've got all the candidates so scared that if they don't give all their money, then they'll lose. Anschutz is kind of a party boss. Matt Needler, who actually makes political decisions for Phil Anschutz.
Well, he makes recommendations.
Phil Anschutz isn't going to go to some meeting.
That one is the closest one because we now have the Independence Institute, which has become farther and farther left, like a lot of ones. And
Colorado Sun.
Well,
Colorado Sun, not really.
No, that's owned by Catherine Murdoch. She invested in the nonprofit that funded Colorado Sun. So it's just amazing. And it's amazing how they can kind of all the party bosses, which is, you know, to the extent it's the funding people, a few funding Republicans have, all claiming that everyone else are party bosses. I mean, it's just amazing.
So it's not Tancredo. It's not Bob Beaupre anymore. I think he lost a lot of clout, frankly, I think somewhat thanks to Matt Arnold and all the lawsuits that kind of exposed who the donors are. Right. There aren't any Republican officials anymore, elected officials, really.
Bremer family down in Colorado Springs. Eli Bremer is now running after losing to Randy Corbin.
But you don't get the impression that they're calling the shots in Colorado.
There are a ton of people who would like
to be a party boss.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, it's not easier said than done. And I think, so here's the thing. I think that a lot of it still is the consultants. I think a lot of it that you may have hit it that on the problem is that since there is no party boss, everybody just thinks they can be the party boss. And that's why they don't want to give up even the last thing they want to do is actually let Republican voters have a say. Because right. The one thing, if you're a potential or a party boss wannabe, what you really don't want, again, are those pesky voters trying to tell you who you should elect.
Well, you know, Peter said the Republican Party cut Tom Tancredo's throat. So let's go back and find out what did happen to Tom Tancredo.
Wait, let me, though, this is pretty funny. From Ben, this is so true, Ben. The real party bosses of the Republicans are the Democrats.
Yeah,
there you go. That is actually very true. Ted Trimpa actually is running the Colorado Republican Party.
He'd probably do a better job. But so who cut Tom Tancredo's throat? So Tom Tancredo decided to run for governor. He was opposed by Bob Beaupre. And in the last week of the campaign, all this incredibly mysterious dark money flooded into a negative campaign against Tom in El Paso County. I mean, that's really what happened. So who funded that, all the money that went in there? Tom didn't even know. But I know.
Wasn't it Chris Christie?
Republican
Governors Association.
It was Paul Singer, who's the Elliott Management hedge fund out of New York. He poured a lot of money in, along with the Ricketts family here out in Nebraska, and some other of the liberal Republican donors all got money with the help of Southers, and they put it through the Attorney General's Association, which was being run with the help of Southers by Chris Christie, and then into a Mitt Romney front, and then to another Mitt Romney fund, and then to the station. So if the people who got Tommy T were not the party bosses, it was Paul Singer and a lot of liberal Republican donors, and the Ricketts family. But that's not Republican Party bosses. It's easy to say, oh, it's the Republican Party bosses. You go, well, they don't have any money. And so the rest of the money maybe came from Anschutz. I don't know. He hides it pretty well.
But I don't know. I think, again, to me, it becomes the consultants. And the problem with having the consultants be your party bosses is the consultants actually don't care who wins or loses. They just care about getting paid for your campaign. If they change the law so that if you lost a race, you didn't get paid, I imagine that we might have some Republican Party bosses who were trying to make sure that the good candidates ran. But
well,
if you want to.
On September 12th, right here in the center of the universe, Westminster, Colorado, at the Hasbro House, which is one of Rev's favorite dartboard places.
They have
dartboards. So there's going to be a huge announcement. Heidi Goodall will be coming to make an important announcement to all of us.
Oh, and, she's announcing that she's forming, because she doesn't want to announce yet. She's forming an exploratory committee. I mean, if you're going to have a major announcement, I don't think you would do it at the Hofbräu. I mean, I like the Hofbräu, but Westminster at 92nd and Mons.
Well, that's where the Republican Party is these days. That's a big venue for Republicans these days. The Hofbräu House, a home of German fascists. No, they're not, just a very nice place. And I enjoy the Hofbräu House. But that's where the announcement will be made.
Now, when did you see that? Is that fake news?
No, it's not fake news. Jimmy Mack, as a grassroots Republican of great renown, was invited to it.
Oh, by he's a Jeffco.
Uh-huh. Christy Burton, not Christy Burton Brown.
I don't think she's inviting Jimmy Mack to things.
No, she's not. But she is. And so there'll be a big, big announcement. And you will see many of your favorite consultants there.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, here's.
And she told Jimmy Mack, bring all the friends you can. And of course, Jimmy Mack has very
Oh, no. Is he going to bring you guys?
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Good for Heidi. If she wants to announce and she wants to run, good for her. I just think that Republicans should be the one who decide whether it's her or Greg Lopez or whoever wants to run, not a bunch of Democrats.
And Catherine Murdoch should decide.
We should have Catherine Murdoch decide who should run for governor. I just don't think we should. And again, this notion that there is, and you're right, because they all keep saying it, it's going to go back to the smoke filled room. It's like, no, anyone who's ever been to a caucus, no offense to the caucus people, knows that these are not really the party bosses. I mean, party bosses do not spend their Saturdays, you know. I mean, the caucuses are the people. That's what Anil Mathai always says. It's local, local, local. So when somebody emerges out of a caucus as the candidate, that is somebody, for the most part, I believe, who's done their work, who's talked to the people, who has the support of the people. Not necessarily grassroots, but just the people who care about politics. And under the opt-out thing, anyone can go to the caucus. There's nothing stopping you. There's nothing stopping you from voting in the primary, except that you have to be a Republican. So it seems to me this is the opposite way of having the party bosses decide, like Ben says, otherwise it's the Democrats. This is the way to take it back to the people and away from the consultants and whatever party boss is pushing whoever their candidate is. I mean, there are no party bosses, like you said.
No, because and
if more, they are, they should be fired because they're doing terrible.
Well, 20 years of Democrats changing every law, every finance law, every primary election law, every general election law, without a peep from the Republican Party. And this, you know, late 2016 was the end of it. In the 2022, they'll probably come up one for jungle primaries. And you get all
it's
these people.
It's laying the groundwork.
Yeah, I mean, there's a wonderful story in the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle.
Chuck's newspaper.
My newspaper, my Glenn Richardson, talks about the Murdoch Five, the five people that Catherine Murdoch got elected in Colorado.
Catherine Murdoch, again, who's a Democrat, got elected as Republicans.
She's the biggest donor.
Taken over basically the Republican Party down at the legislature. I mean, we've been over that, but that's their plan. This is from Dr. Donna. Not surprised hearing about Heidi as she's been prominently posting during the last year. Yeah, she's all over the place. Charlene, you guys are doing the impossible. LPR and the Koch brothers are party bosses.
The Koch brothers gave up. One of them died.
Yeah.
And the other is no longer throwing his money away. He was so disappointed after, and I guess I would be disappointed too, after 20 years of putting hundreds of millions in. The people he raised money for didn't do what he wanted because he wanted unlimited immigration. All he wanted was Koch brothers industries to do well. Really
right.
Could care less about anything else.
And to talk about party bosses, I mean, here's the way it works. The Democrats do have party bosses. Remember back during the primary where there were 8 million people running in the Democrat primary against Trump. We had Ted Trimpa on our show. And I mean, everyone agreed he hated Joe Biden. Nobody liked Kamala Harris. We all thought, well, she looks great on paper. She couldn't get any support. And Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren seemed to be gaining some steam. And then all of a sudden, boom, like literally all of a sudden, poof, everybody dropped out and threw their support behind Joe Biden. And Ted flat out said the party bosses had a meeting and they said the worst thing that could happen would be for Bernie Sanders to get elected or to become the candidate to win the primary. So very specifically, the party bosses of the Democrat Party put Joe Biden in place. The Republican Party in Colorado particularly has no such party bosses that can do that.
I don't think Ted's people were party bosses. Party bosses were the Pendergast.
The Democrat Party bosses.
I mean, the Democratic Party, they don't even have party bosses. What they had were donors.
Well,
we all got together, all of which you fund campaigns who I guess maybe are the new party bosses, but they don't control votes, but they control all the money. And so they all went, no, we can't have Bernie Sanders. We've got to have the senile guy. Oh, yeah, we love the senile guy. I mean, he's great. It's just amazing. But on September 18th, it's going to be fun.
I thought you said the 12th.
The 12th, so how do you get all?
Oh, September 18th. This is from Dr. Donda. The only concern I have is that in some places, the chairs have been working the PC positions, as they have publicly stated that they will be deciding who runs in their county and state and make sure that there will never be another Republican primary, quote, end quote. This is from Ben, the party bosses. So the party bosses, according to Ben, of the Republicans are the Democrats, and the party bosses of the Democrats are the Chi-Coms. Ben, you've had some right on the head there. You know, Dr. Donda, here's the thing that I would say there, though, too, is that that's why we need to change the system. We don't need to go back, I don't think, to the caucus system the way it was before. You got to go back to a system where anyone and everyone can essentially be a delegate, so to speak. I mean, it's essentially being able to vote. But what it does take is people paying attention and voting. I mean, if you don't,
we can make every registered Republican who wants to be a delegate to the final decision.
So it can't be left up to the chair.
Vote in what's called an unassembled convention, and you just vote.
Right.
All 5,000, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000. Everybody can vote. It's the one time in which Catherine Murdoch could not control it. You'd actually have Republicans. I mean, what good is it to have somebody being a Republican standard bearer that's like Larry Hogan in Maryland? Yeah, he won and he believes everything Democrats believe. Or Hugh McCain, who in Colorado votes Democrat.
Why
not just have one big Democratic party? Because right. That's what it's turning into.
And here's the thing. And we just as Americans, I think, have to wake up now. For a while, things just kind of ran. And there was not, I submit it's been happening slowly but surely, and it's now reached the tipping point. But, you know, I didn't go to caucuses, right? I'm like, oh, who wants it? You know, it was boring. It was long, la, la, la. Well, thanks to Ben, we started going. And I think anymore, you know what? If you don't go, if you don't want to be a delegate, if you don't want to vote in the Republican primary, that's your choice. But then you don't get to complain, well, we should let the unaffiliates vote. I mean, if you're not going to vote, then you don't get to complain about what happens. And how can anyone look around this country and say, well, I think things are fine. I don't think my vote is going to make a difference. We have to vote. We have to take responsibility. And you know, we tell our kids, voting is a responsibility. Educate yourself. Go out there and do it, right? I remember it was a big thing when you turn 18 and you could go vote, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's like, well, we'll just, you know, let some, you know, four people or one person at a caucus decide. Well, that's what you get then. And then you get the Republican, they're not the party bosses, but I think you're right, sort of the party money and the people making money.
It would
money.
Be nice to have some candidates who believe in the Republican platform, which really is actually pretty good. I mean, at least different from the Democrat platform. And if you want to just have the same as a Democrat, then you just go to the Independence Institute and you can get Kevin Priola and you can have heroin injection sites
right
in your backyard.
And real quick, because we only have 3 minutes left, Dr. Donna is saying, are we limited by precinct as to how many delegates each is allotted as per the last election? No, Dr. Donda, the bottom line, as I understand it, is if the Republican Party decides to sue to opt out or opt out of having essentially just a Democrat primary or a primary where you have to be Republican to vote in the Republican primary, they can set the rules however they want. And what Chuck was saying is in other states where they've done this, where they fixed this open primary because it's been such a disaster, essentially anyone can be a delegate. So you can vote. Anyone can vote. They don't limit the number.
Primary ones. I mean, you can do any system you want, but the system we got is one that's controlled by Catherine Murdoch and the Democrats.
Right, as Ben said.
And to have people who are voting in Democratic primaries, which includes John Caldera telling us, no, you have to keep
because of the party bosses.
Don't take my vote away. What do you mean? You're voting for the other side.
Yeah. Well, just join, become a Republican. If you don't, why would you? I keep going back to, why are we letting people who don't like the Republican Party to vote in the Republican primary? That's just like nonsense.
Well, he said, don't take my vote away. He's saying, John, you don't bother voting in. You vote in the Democratic primary and you'll still be able to.
It's like, still be this able would to. Be like, I know, it'd be like having, so you've got a new boyfriend. It'd be like asking his old girlfriend, should I wear this? It's like, no, that's a stupid idea. So why are we letting people who don't like Republicans vote in the primary? We need to become the party bosses. I think you, Ben, the Fab Five, and all of you guys here too. Hey, listen, that's going to wrap it up for us. We will see you on Wednesday. Who knows? Things are happening so fast in this day and age. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to Robert Spencer. We love having everyone on Zoom. You can catch all of the shows at chuckandjulie.com. Thank you to the great guys at BBS, and we'll see you Wednesday.
Bye-bye.